Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Tim Stanley to the broadcast. Until February of 2009, Tim was the Chief Information Officer and Senior Vice President of Innovation, Gaming, and Technology for Harrah's Entertainment. Over the last 10 years, Tim played a key role in enabling Harrah's to become the largest provider of branded casino entertainment in the world. As the company's Chief Innovation Officer, he led multidisciplinary teams focused on the creation and execution of new business initiatives and next-generation marketing, gaming, hospitality, service, and technology innovations throughout the company. As the Senior Vice President of Enterprise Gaming, Tim was responsible for the strategy, product development, marketing and merchandising, revenue management, service delivery, and financial performance of the company's slots, tables, and various other gaming products and operations domestically and abroad. As the Chief Information Officer and Senior Vice President of Information Technology, Tim was responsible for the strategy, architecture, program management, development, support, and operations of the entire portfolio of Harrah's world-class IT-enabled business systems. Prior to joining Harrah's, Tim was a partner with the consulting firms US Web and March 1st, the Chief Information Officer of National Airlines, and Tim also held a variety of leadership positions in the areas of IT, marketing, operations, research and development, and consulting with Intel Corporation, Optima KPMG, JetBlue Airlines, Innovatech, and Kimberly-Clark Corporation. Currently, Tim is the President of TechExecs, an executive advisory services consultancy, and CXO of Innovatechs, a business innovation and execution firm. Tim also lectures on business, innovation, and technology as an adjunct professor at the Business School of the University of California, Irvine, and as an informatics advisory board founding member at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Among Tim's many honors, he was named the Information Week's Chief of the Year for 2007 for his unique innovation, business, and IT roles and achievements. Tim holds graduate degrees in international business and technology management from Thunderbird and Arizona State University, and a Bachelor of Science degree in engineering from the University of Washington. I recently caught up with Tim in his office in Southern California, where our conversation centered around World-Class IT Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we spent much of our time covering Tim's unique perspective on innovation and IT's role in fostering it. Tim Stanley, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you, Pete. Good to see you again.
As you now think about the weeks and months ahead, what do you have in store? Where do you see yourself focusing, and what is capturing your interest these days?
Yeah, great question. And I think in short, I'm sort of an inherent planner and think these things through. And there were two broad areas that I wanted to go off and sort of invest in for, call it, Tim 3.0, if you will. As I said, I've looked back, what are things I'm appreciative or passionate about, and kind of setting the stage for, the next series of things. So two of those are always an intrigue and a passion, and frankly, a bit of thankfulness for the different opportunities that education has afforded me. So one of my givebacks, and I began to dabble in it a little bit a couple years ago, is in and around education and business school and college students. And obviously I have a little girl who's now entering into the primary education system. So I'm actually engaged, and I'll be heading off to a very unique program. I was accepted into something called Bridge. And in a couple weeks I'll be out in Boston with about 20, 25 other executives who are all getting sort of retrained and regrained into how to lead and drive college, particularly MBA or business school programs. I'll be teaching a course, the capstone course of the MBA program at the University of California.
That's great.
In Irvine here in spring, and also developing some exec ed stuff around innovation, technology, entrepreneurship. And I'm pretty excited about that, and been participating in a number of classes out here and kind of just getting a vibe from different profs and how they do it and the students. And so that's going to actually be, I think, very cool, and it's just right in the sweet spot of what I am excited and passionate about, obviously innovation, technology, and new business models.
That's great.
Yeah, second track is not unlike you. I've always had a passion for solving problems and looking at situations and figuring out how to kind of help folks through those. And I have a firm that I created kind of in that regard. I do some business advisory and consultative services, but also I'm on a couple of boards, two startups, and in some discussions right now with a couple of public companies. Also doing some, as I indicated, some advisory work for a couple of pretty well-known companies and some new products or services or things they're developing, which is pretty fun.
That's great.
And also working on a couple of approaches. I'm making some, call it strategic investments in some technologies and some areas that interest me, and also dabbling a little bit with some coaching. I've had people come to me over the last couple of years and ask if, talk them through either new roles they've taken on or how to tackle the concept of innovation or technology or IT or operations in a company or something they're struggling with. And that's also kind of fulfilling. And option three is I'm evaluating a couple of these ideas that, have been with me for a while. I worked on some in my previous role, some new ones around. Should I go off and create and solve some problems that I think got some clarity and I think some approaches that can do that with a couple of startup ideas I have?
Mm-hmm.
And as I've sort of reemerged, I've had more than a few people reach out and approach me with some different stuff and ideas. I love startups. I love kind of what I call run-ups. So there's a few of those out there that I'm actually considering, and probably after the turn of the year, you may find me jumping into one of those two paths.
That's great.
So that's it.
Well, that's it. That doesn't sound like too much, I guess, then, Tim.
that's what retirement looks like.
That's right, exactly.
I was with a couple of folks the other day. I'm pretty sure I figured out as well. I'm one of those guys that probably never really can retire. But working on the stuff you'd like to do.
Yep.
It's never really worked, right?
That's right. Exactly right. Well, no doubt these are the different areas that will further burnish your reputation, Tim. But I'd like to actually take a step back memory lane to those areas where you earned your reputation. And in our forum, we've actually spoken with a good number of people who've mentioned that the IT department is potentially one of those logical places that can become a hub of innovation. And you're really somebody who embodies this very notion as someone who, in fact, formerly held not only the position of CIO, but also held the innovation responsibilities. You were the head of innovation at Harrah's. And I'd love to get your perspective on that. How do you see IT's role in innovation? And do you believe that it is logical for innovation to reside within the IT department across organizations?
It's a very multi-layered question, but let me give you the short answer. And the answer is yes, comma, it depends a little bit.
Okay.
And I think every part of a company, any company, should feel ownership, accountability, some passion, and such for innovation. It is the nature of business to execute and do, the things that they teach you and that are always talked about in business, focus, 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 execute, execute, that's right on.
Right.
But innovation is a very heterogeneous process in terms of where innovations come from and how it can be executed and the like. And I will tell you that IT, classic IT organizations and companies or leaders who I think perhaps try to drive IT into a more critical component or fabric of their business, in both cases can play a significant role in innovation for lots of reasons. I mean, IT, even in its most classic sense, is touches and is engaged and active in almost all facets or parts of any business.
Right.
If you're big in supply chain, customer-facing relationships, partnerships, order processing, transaction, all the classic things. So in and of that alone, IT certainly has a broad purview and the ability to enable many of the different innovations, be they what I call incremental innovation or even some big idea stuff, to do that.
Great point.
That said, whether it should sort of own or lead it, I think really depends on a number of factors. It's not always obvious. It's not always the right fit based on the company culture, kind of what makes a particular company tick. And then certainly the nature of the IT organization and the leader and the leadership team that he or she has around them makes a big difference. Obviously, in my case, our case, long history of that, certainly before I was at Harrah's, and, and it just ultimately fulfilled a sweet spot, and we had the right organization and approach to do that, and had been delivering lots of that over the years. Certainly, as I formally took on an innovation leadership role, kind of funny story about that. I remember a few years ago sitting in what we had called a marketing council, and CEO Gary Loveman and I were looking at a number of different things that were being pitched and proposed. And I remember writing on a yellow sticky, you know, what we really need is sort of a chief innovation officer, leader, driver, you know, executor here. P.S. it's not me. And,
he did not take your advice, apparently.
Apparently, it was me. And so we certainly set about to do that. And really, a lot of that initial work was to, you know, continue to do a lot of the good things we've done, and we came up with some great stuff. But to really begin to put a methodology, a little bit of a process around something that, some people would argue shouldn't have a process. But and it was really helping corral and organize where we were heading, developing these paths I called vectors of these are the kinds of activities, and sequentially some things will move along to do incremental innovations as well as pursue some of these big idea concepts. And, you know, through the course of that, I think we've developed a pretty interesting way, almost an epidemiological approach of test and control and things we've become pretty known about, and moving and advancing a number of these items forward to continue to knock out quite a number of base hits, and then also really have our eye on kind of the big game and some of these big ideas to move it forward. So I think in that context, innovation needs to happen. I think there is a process and methodology. There's clearly leadership and ownership that needs to be identified in any company, and I think there's help that they can get in that regard to help them do their. IT absolutely must play a role in all of that, and in some cases, I think IT can lead, co-lead, or you know, really help kind of champion that cause going forward.
That's great. I'd love to actually linger on that point for a little bit longer, because innovation is one of these classic areas that, you know, so many famous ones come from some sort of inspiration of sorts. You don't hear necessarily as often about the process of innovation to help generate these ideas, or at least create the sort of environment where the inspiration is more easily takes place. I know that you could probably talk for hours on the methods that you've used, but I wonder if you can kind of just talk specifically a little bit more about some of the things you put in place process-wise to make sure that Harrah's was constantly thinking about innovation.
Yeah, let me give it a shot. So, you know, I think part of it is, a bit of a funny aside, some of the work and the innovative things I think we've done within Harrah's came from, and as they always should, somewhat rooted in the direction and the strategy we were seeking to take the company. And I think starting from that as a fundamental premise is always the case.
Yep.
However, along the way, there were certain sort of inspirational quasi-happenstance ones. One of the more interesting ones is years ago when we were first developing what's really the core premise of Total Rewards, loyalty and CRM and all that, and the way it works today, we rolled out a big project to that regard, and myself and the person leading on the marketing side decided to take a big group on a cruise. I had only been on one other one prior as part of my anniversary, and a big piece of the inspiration for something we now delivered and developed called interactive CRM, i.e. a real-time kind of interactive, a lot of people starting to refer to it as almost multi-channel marketing, came from that cruise experience and the woefully poor sort of experience I had when I actually entered into some of the entertainment venues and the casino on one of those cruise ships. So
it's
that combination of inspiration and a bit of a plan and a methodology, I think, often is where cool stuff comes. And how to frame the kinds of things you're sort of directionally pursuing, not overbound it, but certainly give some structure or direction. And that's rooted in, company strategy. Either what you are, who you are, what your kind of approach is, to some extent what you're good at, and as I create these things I call vectors, for us I developed, you know, six. Only two of them had anything discernibly to do with, say, technology. Some were, what I call ingredient pieces of, different advancements or types of technologies that I thought would enable the sort of the top tier of the direction we were heading. Some were around process, ways to work, people to work with, you know, things like cloud and different things like that. We'll come back and talk later. But a lot of them were around the fundamentals of the business. So a concept called smart service, how to really create a differentiated gaming and entertainment and link many of these experiences together, this concept of interactive CRM. So in defining those, and again, of course, each company would have a quite different kind of approach to that based on the industry and what they're doing, that then lets you kind of put forward a number of initiatives and steps along the way, sort of building blocks, and to find out at the end a number of bigger ideas. And these would be things companies would typically aspire to. Either we want to, you know, perhaps grow into new markets or expand our channels or acquire new customers or create greater value from existing customers by exposing them to a broader array of services or a more experiential, entertainment thing. It makes a stickiness or a sense of loyalty.
Yes.
Perhaps certain partnerships or new lines of business you want to pursue. So those are some of the kind of what I call almost a vertical axis of big idea things. And then these vectors kind of emanated around and out from our goal of different things we would pursue on the way. And then you select certain initiatives, projects that might actually help you advance that forward, and there are things the traditional sense of your business can kind of get its head around, right? Many operations and parts of the business, particularly if they think about classic business-driven or IT projects,
right,
they're focused on, we want to get that thing out, right? Project X, Project Y.
Exactly.
And by overlaying some of these approaches against that, you can kind of move that along. Now, one of the, I call a little bit of the secret sauce and the like, but a methodological approach and a team that I put in place was a purposely small team, generally at any given time about 10, maybe 12 internal folks who were the innovation team, and they were sourced from a variety of different spots within and around the company, out of operations, marketing, of course IT, gaming, and the like. And then augment that around with a series of relationships. I have a long history of this concept that I call kind of co-sourcing and partnership.
Yes.
And I never take partnership lightly. There are vendors and partners, and these are really key folks who can kind of get where you're at, the vision, and there's some mutual value.
Yes.
And assembling that group together to pursue down some of these initiatives and vectors and with the idea of sort of the big idea really helped us kind of scale and make significant progress. And at any given time, we would develop and flesh out a number of these concepts and do them in purposefully very short amounts of time and bounded such that you didn't try to solve world hunger nor let all of the, I affectionately refer to the corporate antibodies in any company get in the way. There are, hundreds of ways by which companies kill innovation, often inadvertently.
Yes.
And part of the intent here was to, obviously not to get us in any trouble or the like, but to do these quickly, iteratively, and rapidly and use a concept I called labs, not only your classic labs. Certainly we had some folks working in back rooms in central facilities and exposing things to customers, but purposely doing live human trials, I would call them, in a very iterative, interesting way that would get the initial concept out relatively quickly, put a bunch of analytics and criteria and decision things around it, get it working, and then start what I call turning the dials. And through that process of iteration, that's usually where you figured out that most good ideas have somewhere between 20 and 80% of them are right. You just don't know which 20 or 80%
exactly
is really the thing that matters.
Yes.
And by doing it in that fashion or forum and engaging employees and customers and a number of people in that process and having some approaches around how you could kind of capture and measure and discern that, we could figure out what moved the dial pretty quickly. And as a result, we'd have 10 or 15 of these things running pretty regularly along these different vectors and could significantly move the needle way more quickly and impactfully on a number of these than we had ever done even in, you know, the past 5 or 8 years.
That's great. I think I'm hearing you say a few different things here. I mean, a lot of different things, of course, but some of the key principles I'm drawing from this is, first of all, that there be somebody that's in charge of this, that there be a body that's keeping an eye on all these things, that there be a diverse array of people that are brought together, providing different perspectives from across the group, and then providing a process through which ideas can be tested, allowing some to fail fast, perhaps, allowing features to become more prominent or less prominent based upon the feedback from customers and so forth. Is that a fair kind of synopsis of some of the things that you were thinking about principle-wise?
As always, you're a master of sort of distilling that things down, and I think the answer is yes. I think two additions to that that are probably critical are engagement of a number of different partnerships and different things too. This to expose you to things that you would not necessarily otherwise assume or put together, either experiences from other companies, other industries, and the like. And then the other piece is around, is without overdoing it, but to definitely put an approach and a method around the analytics by which you can sort of evaluate and measure these things and keep turning this dial to figure out what really does move the needle. It's sometimes not always what you thought it might be, but it's just slightly adjacent or orthogonal to that, and that's where the bigger hit will come from.
Excellent. And in terms of the engagement of customers, is there a balance between pulling ideas from them versus sharing things that may not yet have occurred to them? I realize it may be difficult to generalize completely, but is there a thought you have on that?
Yeah, this is certainly much research and other things have been done on this. And, you know, there's classical approaches, and they all have their merits. So the classic, you know, focus group or understanding your customers and asking them, you know, what they want, all very valid and very good things to do.
Right.
However, particularly as it relates to innovative things or, again, having your objectives very clear, in some cases you're trying to change the dynamics or the experience or the things that can be delivered, and you have to, some would call it go with gut, and there's an element of that, but you also have to be sort of thoughtful about what is you're trying to do, and a customer or your traditional customer may not get that, nor certainly would they be likely to ask for it. And in fact, sometimes you will bring things forward, and much of the work I was doing was looking outside of our particular industry and what do consumers do in other parts of their life, particularly as it relates to the consumerization of much of the content we consume and digital interactivity and experiential and the way that people collaborate or communicate amongst friends, family, different players. Mm-hmm. And in that regard, if you only pursued within your company or with your existing customers, you may get false reads of what they really want. So you have to incorporate that in. But I think if you're really trying to change or evolve, you have to push them beyond their existing incremental asks, right? I sure wish I would get more stuff for free and, you know, things like that. And here's a key lesson learned out of this. To do that effectively, and this is a big part of how we approach things, you have to rapidly prototype. We created these things and actually made them work, often, you know, sort of in a more limited fashion, or it's not completely integrated or baked out by design. And it is in the process and the creation of doing and delivering that, that people can see, touch, experience, both inside your company and customers and others, that's where the ahas start to happen, and you have something that you can, as I said, test, learn, turn the dials with, without just doing, you know, paper mock-ups or showing pretty pictures or, you know, assessing a number of PowerPoint slides saying about what we're going to do, right?
Right. Right. Makes very good sense.
And that, I think, is that's a big part of it. And how you go about doing that and rapid prototyping and executing this is part of what I think, part of, I think, the nut we really cracked.
That's great. Well, gosh, I can certainly understand why innovation is a big focus on some of the things you're thinking about pursuing in the future, as
It
clearly
is indeed. It is indeed.
you've gained a lot of great experience and have so many great insights, Tim. Taking another step back, actually, I mentioned a moment ago that your responsibilities at the time that you left Harrah's included not only, of course, being CIO and the head of innovation, but there's actually a third leg that I'd left out. You were the SVP of gaming technology operations. And I think it's interesting to think that you had three roles, three in some ways very different. I'm sure there was a lot of intersection, thus the logic in having them reside with one talented executive. But I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the process that led you to take on those responsibilities as well, going from IT executive to taking on really more, business responsibilities at the same time.
No, it's a great question. I've done a bit of thinking about this, and this is not typical, although I do think you're seeing a bit more and more of it over the last few years. It's probably helpful to consider a couple of things. First, I have not always been an IT person or an executive in that space. In fact, of my career, probably only about the last 10, 12 years have formally been involved with IT role. I've been in marketing, operations, R&D, consulting, a number of other things prior. And as I say, I've sat on almost all sides of that table in collaborations and partnerships and the like. And some years ago within Harrah's, and having the opportunity to be as part of what we call the senior management team, there you're exposed to a whole bunch of stuff. So, you're debating how are we going to handle healthcare this year and what should we do around code of commitment or responsible gaming and marketing programs and plans and the like. So you get pretty good exposure into that, and over the last few years, increasingly as we were helping steer and drive the company forward and then ultimately to take it private, got involved in a lot more kind of meaty things there. There was a series of discussions while we're still a public company around succession planning. I was one of those people that was being discussed about would I, be interested in, getting on a track to pursue CEO or something like that over time. And one of the things that was suggested or offered to me was to go out and actually operate some of our businesses in property operations. And I remember distinctly that conversation like the yellow sticky one, which was could do that, and frankly, I'm not opposed to it per se, but I think in doing so, there's a lot of people who can do a really great job at that. I think I could actually contribute more in a different way to handle that than just going out and doing sort of the classic operating of a property. There's certainly great things that come out of that, but without sort of tapping my own horn in that regard, I think there was, a lot of the technology, the innovation, and other stuff that I'm pretty darn good at would have probably had to go on the wayside a little bit in that regard. And so what we had decided to do is actually put me in charge of gaming operations at the corporate level, and in doing that, really begin to drive a number of initiatives and have all the properties work with me on that regard. So whether it's slot operations, tables, sportsbook, all of those kinds of different components of running that piece of the operation, and begin to drive greater profitability, some service initiatives, look at labor, all those things one does in an operating role, as well as use that to begin to influence the strategic direction of how could we sort of crack the nut on creating a more differentiated, personalized experience around our core business, which is gaming, and the one area in at least our industry, and others suffer this as well, where we've had actually very little power. You procure, you buy many of these games and technologies that go on the floor, and they're somewhat by design all the same thing. Everybody's got the same stuff. You just mix it around, and we tended to do a pretty good job with analytics of figuring out which ones our customers like better and which ones are more profitable and where to put them and how many and all that stuff. So by having the combination of those duties of actual operational accountability and revenue and people and all that, and being able to look at the learnings that come out of that and what will it take to evolve that to the next level, and also then drive innovation and be, technologically responsible for all things underneath the covers, that was a pretty, I think, interesting and useful combination, and it gave me, you know, again, some great insights and definitely some other different experiences and lessons learned. And I do think that folks listening to, you know, this broadcast and folks you work with, taking on something in an operating capacity in any area, IT folks probably gravitate a bit more towards the financial sometimes, or supply chain, or what I call heart of house. Those are all cool too, and particularly if those are meaningful to your company. But I think expanding out into some of those areas, either as an interim assignment or as a broader sense of responsibility, it's really important. I think gives you just a greater appreciation and perspective for how to do what you do better.
That's a great advice, and therefore makes, just as you described with the experience you had, makes it that much easier to translate business needs into technology solutions and have a really fluid process of innovating, to draw back from your earlier responses as well. Excellent. Just thinking about something you just touched on in terms of how Hera's leveraged technology, I'm struck as I think about Hera's history, about how, you know, over the course of the past 10 years, 15 years, Hera's really was, so much of its growth, its predominance in the industry was due to insights the company drew about technology, from technology, using technology that the competition didn't necessarily get to as quickly as it did. And I wonder, as you think about other industries, or as you think about certain types of companies, what is it that makes an organization ripe for this sort of change? Are there lessons that you can think of from your past experience that you think might be useful for other organizations who are looking to kind of leverage technology as the strategic weapon to surpass the competition?
Yeah, I do. You know, I think to play this thing back in history, in the context of the industry that I've had the good fortune to work in these last number of years, the many innovations and really the execution of those innovations, I think, was the key. And if you were to clump them together, oversimplified, you would say we probably did some interesting and compelling work around at the foundational layer, sort of business intelligence, data capture and analytics. But again, most importantly, using that to drive certain parts of our business. Initially, it was around, you know, loyalty and customer engagement and satisfaction. Then service was another big area where, you know, it's a service industry, and creating aspirational elements and processes and programs, and then using, again, that information and data and business intelligence, decision science to help reinforce or drive that was a key. And then you know, the two big components of our particular business were operations, of course, and marketing. And then juxtaposing those two on that and leveraging a number of other approaches and processes and systems we developed, capabilities I generally call them, and again, tying and integrating all that together to further advance and create that ability to engage, excite, interact with customers, and allow employees to serve them better and make smarter decisions on the back end of, you know, how many rooms should we build and where should we put the games and what kind of games and all of those things that ultimately just kept building and building upon themselves to get us to, you know, doing real-time interactive. It's that setting out of kind of the basic goals and vision of, look, we think we could kind of, quote-unquote, compete on analytics, and there have been articles and stories written on that. Service culture was certainly something that Gary Lovin, our CEO, had brought to the equation as a ex-Harvard Business School prof and advancing that. And as we increasingly put these strategic initiatives in place over time, certainly with size, it's harder and harder to roll more stuff out, but we kept being able to take those cores and build and build and advance upon them. And so to your question, I think, I actually believe almost any company with some clarity of thought and vision and leadership and application of effort and sort of breaking down barriers and silos and all those other lovely things that occur in companies can benefit from that. Each one will be different in terms of what they might obviously choose to pursue and how they will go about it. But I think the core of, you know, data and analytics and the the capabilities, the systems, the platforms, the methods by which you do that, and the rigor by which you hold yourself and your organization accountable to use those things or to make sure the information's there and then it's actually getting used, is fundamental and paramount as a starting base to almost everyone. And then spending your time and energy building kind of closed loop capabilities or processes that tap into that, feed into it, and continue to, you know, integrate and provide additional services in front, whether it's much smarter ability to service your customers, whether it's acquisition, whether it's, again, supply chain or distribution, marketing, financial actually can be a very compelling one depending on the type of business. I think all those can benefit. There are certain industries, to your question, that I actually think are riper than others for probably even more fundamental shift or a breakout deal. But I think some of that applies to pretty much all of them.
That's great. And that's so many interesting points there, Tim. I think one of the ones that almost seems like it's the most obvious, but I think you've certainly spoken so compellingly as to why it's so important to keep the eye on is actually execution. Like bringing all these interesting capabilities to bear is one thing, but using them to their full value is quite another. And it's interesting to hear that actually, one of the keys you see to the success of yourself, of your team, of Harris more generally speaking, in its use of IT is not only dreaming up the creative solutions, but also using them to their full value.
Absolutely right. And you know, I have many Timisms. I guess I've sort of developed or been applied to me over the years. But one of my many favorites is we've certainly got recognized and done some good and hard work around alignment.
Right.
And one of them is alignment is a contact sport. And that is as true today as ever, and in fact, maybe more so, particularly as folks are struggling with, you know, the economy and decisions and all the kinds of things they've got to go through. Having a clarity of purpose, you know, call it a strategy, if you will, and a real focus on execution, but still enabling and allowing this innovation and opportunity to enable that, be it just in the exploration of ideas, but a way, as you've correctly pointed out, to execute those and give them the chance to see the light of day and vet them out. Not all will work, and frankly, if you're always doing hits and successes, you're probably not trying hard enough to push the envelope. But I think that is critical. And I think, you know, it's a messy, tough business. There are, particularly doing some of those roles, not just myself, but others, there are days when you're like, man, it would be much easier to take the path less traveled and just do what everybody kind of thinks, you know, we ought to
right.
do. But the leadership, the fortitude, the collaboration, the team to kind of keep pushing and forging ahead, even in the darker days when something's not working as you like, or there's just politics or whatever else is going on, that I think is where a lot of your audience and folks probably wants to look in the mirror every once in a while and figure out how do I help enable or contribute or lead that. And that's a little bit of the key. Alignment is a contact sport, and it is a leadership thing.
That's a great point. Great points all around, Tim. Thank you. I can't let you get away, Tim, without asking you to look into your crystal ball a little bit. I'm curious, as you think out for the next, one, three, 5 years, whatever the time horizon might be, what are some of the technologies that you see emerging that are exciting you? Where do you see kind of technology innovation of the future?
Great question, and boy, to put in a punditry role, there are so many interesting ones out there. And in fact, I'm starting to do some work as I prepare up to do some additional speaking, and may actually write some stuff here. And certainly, the class that I'll be leading here shortly.
Yes,
you know, there are a few trends. Some of it is amazing in that, as I said, it's leverage of some of these concepts I've already talked about, but just putting them really into play. But I think the change, the evolution in what's traditionally been a huge powerhouse of a lot of good stuff that we and others have done around relational database and data warehouse and all that doesn't go away. But I do think the really exciting stuff in that space is the expansion of that. I've been a huge advocate of what's now called cloud computing or SaaS or after service providers and stuff for many years,
yes.
and started a couple companies on that. That, I think, is a big play. And as you start to move from, you know, just even clouds to much more of a pervasive environment, to be a little bit out there, you know, I'm not a big movie buff or whatever, but the ones that I actually find, besides, you know, the kid ones I get to hang out with these days, and some cool stuff going on there, by the way,
right.
are ones that sort of push the envelope and make you think a little bit about the future. You can, you know, pick your Minority Reports or whatever. And, you know, movies are interesting because they do two things. A, they help people kind of visualize and put themselves in that experience, and that's a powerful thing. But you think about where some of these have taken you over the years, and the pervasiveness and the ease of access and the simplicity and the interconnectedness of a lot of this information, we're starting to slowly keep seeing that happen. And that, I think, is probably going to be one of the most profound and fundamental changes, whether it's in just the world of, you know, customer information and how the, you know, 2.0 is shifting that power into the consumer
right.
to be able to tell people what they want or talk amongst each other and tap into the crowdsourcing concept, which is a big, big deal, by the way, to biotechnology and exposing all of that stuff. Obviously, people are much smarter than me going out and figuring out the genome itself, but then making that information available in this sort of semantic kind of web world and being able to tap into it with all these widgets and services and ability to pull that together, and I think increasingly to put it in context with people. I started my career working on, you know, like original horribly user interfaced, you know, GPS systems. I had one in my car driving around, you know, New Mexico and California when I was back in the Air Force. It was just awful. Today, that kind of stuff, whether it was the kind of work we did with Microsoft on the surface computing, mm-hmm. you know, the explosion in the haptics and iPhones and those things, and some cool virtualization stuff. You'll see more and more even coming into the home. TVs, you know, the movies are all pushing us into the 3D experience, which is not the, you know, same cheesy one that we all maybe enjoyed as kids in the 70s and 80s and stuff.
Right.
But a much more immersive deal. I think some of that will increasingly come to a variety of different touch points that I call them, and be more context sensitive. So when I'm driving around and can't find a place, it's not that I'm going through some horrible experience of typing all that stuff into my car computer GPS, but I'm talking through it. It's displaying something. It's giving me some of the, you know, whether it's Google Maps or the, you know, synth capabilities that are showing me pictures that have been taken, a bunch of stuff, and bringing
right.
it and says, well, here's where you are now and where you need to be. I mean, all that is enabled by what I was just talking about on the back end, and I think that experiential enhancement and making this information available and all the little companies and technologies and things that are making that happen is some of the most exciting, compelling stuff. I happen, perhaps not unlike you, given you spend lots of time traveling around and seeing people, you know, travel has always been a passion for me.
Uh-huh.
I like being to places. As we all know, the experience of getting there is sadly sometimes pretty awful. But there are some of these, as I've gone off and done, you know, crazy stuff this summer, somewhat purposely, you know, whether it's cruise ships, I've, you know, ridden donkeys across Greece, I mean, you, all kinds of stuff, RV trips. You know, there's interesting people. KOA is a great example. I you know, stayed at a couple of KOAs of all odd things. I began to be kind of intrigued by what they were doing. It's an interesting business. They're all over. They're in cool spots or in not so cool spots. But they've implemented things like, you know, loyalty program and whatever. Well, it turns out it's an old Harris guy from years ago who used to run Lake Tahoe, and they're applying some of these concepts and precepts, which we've done and worked on for years, into new businesses or industries, and you start to see the power of that. If you push out farther and look at what one can do in a retail experience versus what's really possible, what you can do today, and what the lack of integration between, say, the online channel and mobile, and you walking around the store, which, you know, we still like to do, or going out for food and drink, or taking a cruise or a particular experience, sometimes you want to check out, but I guarantee you, as you are probably like me and most of your audience,
right.
you're pretty well dialed in or connected or like to be, and you want it your way, and you'd like to be able to tap into that context-sensitive stuff.
Yes.
That, to me, is probably one of the holy grails. I think I'm investing in clean tech. I'm doing mm-hmm. some cool stuff in a number of those areas. But to me, that experiential piece and really tapping into the digitization and all this stuff and the smart use and the pervasiveness of the back-end data and video and other technologies, that to me, I think, is where it's going to continue to get exciting because people get it and want more of that, and it becomes more of a pull process as opposed to companies classically sort of pushing things out and sort of forcing customers to use them or try to get them. It's a pull as opposed to a push.
Understood.
Does that help?
That helps a lot. Well, Tim, gosh, thank you so much for this. I've been particularly looking forward to this interview as I'm one of the fortunate people who's had the opportunity to see your mind work up close, and have certainly enjoyed our interactions in the past. And in fact, as the topic is world-class IT, you know, our own that is my firm's world-class IT journey began with you. And so I certainly appreciate you taking a little time. Now that you've had some time to reflect and have some travels and think about all these new ways in which innovation might happen, it's really been a wonderful opportunity to sit down and spend some time with you.
Likewise, I also harken back to those good days. We did some great work, and putting those early stage things in place for world-class IT really helped frame up a lot of the cool stuff we were able to do over these last number of years, and I'm pretty much excited and engaged to jump back in, work with a number of folks to do that, and probably you again to kind of ramp up on a next journey.
Wonderful.
Of some of these new innovations and opportunities. So thanks for the opportunity, and I look forward to chatting with you again, Pete.
Wonderful. Well, thanks again. I certainly do as well, and best of luck with everything you've got going in the future, Tim.
Thank you. See you soon.
Just listen to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. This forum has been created so that we might have a series of discussions with a variety of IT leaders to understand, evaluate, and define world-class performance as it relates to Meta Strategies' five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in a reactive mode, constantly fighting fires. If, however, systems and hardware work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It's important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development to quality assurance through to support and all of the other aspects of the IT department, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming crucial to corporations, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our sound editor is Chris Davis, our web editor is Christian Dooley, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.